I probably butchered your name, and I apologize.
No, that's good.
Okay.
May it please the court. My name is David Gruning. I represent the Louisiana Board of Embalmers and Funeral Directors. The board was the defendant in an action below for declaratory and injunctive relief. The district court ordered an injunction against the board, preventing it from enforcing the regulatory scheme that regulates the process of death and burial, including funeral direction in Louisiana. The board has appealed. The district court ruled that three separate provisions in the statute of varying length were unconstitutional, one on its face, two as applied. The district court did not distinguish which of these three sections were was unconstitutional as a violation of equal protection or due process of law.
Okay. Give us the three as you appreciate them.
The first section is the sale of caskets by someone other than a funeral director. That's Section 37 and Section 831. The second section is the definition of what constitutes funeral merchandise. And the third section, which is three subsections of Section 842 of Title 37, deals with what you have to do to become a funeral director.
Which what?
What you have to do to become qualified as a funeral director. So the on its face, the facial ruling was as to the sale of caskets at retail. That's the first rule.
And I want to be, I think this is clear, but the Abbey can still sell to the funeral homes the
yes.
caskets. There's nothing to prevent that. The problem is they can't sell it to the general public under the law.
That's it.
Okay.
That is exactly it. They are not foreclosed from selling in the wholesale market at all.
Okay.
And indeed, there's no evidence in this record that they would suffer were they to be required to sell in the wholesale market as opposed to the retail market.
Let me ask you this. I don't know that it will or will not save the constitutionality of this, but there's no question that we have an extremely sympathetic opponent for you. We have a monastery making what sounds like wonderful caskets, no question about that. But this law applies equally to, you know, if I decided in my garage to just start hammering nails and, you know, wood and just taking advantage of bereaved people on my block and saying, here's a casket, it's a lot cheaper than Joe's funeral home. I mean, in other words, the fact of who our litigants are here isn't dispositive of at least the facial challenge.
That's right. And in fact, in reading the original complaint and the early written submissions by the plaintiffs, that is, whom I will refer to together as the Abbey, that's Abbot Brown and Mark Coudrain is a deacon in the Catholic Church and not a monk, but he works there. The religious character of what the monks do features very prominently, and it would be an interesting question if this case had been posed as a free exercise case, but it's not. It's a case involving the sale of an ordinary box that has no special significance. I think that everyone knows that these particular boxes do have a special significance.
Well, but I didn't mean that they were a sympathetic litigant just because they're religious, but I mean because, in addition, it seems that it's a quality product. And so to the extent that you have any consumer protection, maybe you've abandoned that concept here, but to the extent there's any consumer protection quality to this statute, we have to, on the facial challenge, look at the fact that there could be chop shops out there run by unsavory characters who are selling caskets.
That's exactly so.
Okay.
I think that's an important
point. That's
what
I meant, although, yes, you're right, the religious quality adds another level. But I'm simply saying I think nobody's challenging the quality of workmanship and the honor in which this is done by the monastery.
No, and not, okay. No, certainly not.
Let me ask you, why shouldn't we look at this statute and you should read it, and on its face it looks like a classic transfer of wealth, flat out the product of legislative log rolling with no rational basis for it other than to the quid pro quo for the funeral home association's power in the legislature.
Well, for one reason, there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence in this record of such log rolling.
Well,
I know people, there's a lot of...
Whoa. That inference comes for the absence of a rational explanation for the ban of a competing product here. What you've done is to simply cut out the competition to the funeral homes, and you've done it by insisting on qualifications which seemed to have on its face, and that's why I'm asking you to explain to me, any rational basis for the, what's the rational basis for insisting that a person has to have a bill to open a funeral home, which, as I read the statute, you essentially do, in order to sell a casket?
Interesting, if I may, there are several points in your question that I need to respond, that I would like to respond to. If I respond to your last point first, the three sections of the statute that the district court held unconstitutional don't address whether one needs to open a funeral home or whether one needs to have an embalming facility, that sort of thing. So it's basically just the issue of whether the state may regulate the retail sale of an ordinary commercial item for some other purpose. If I could go to that purpose, I think it may help me answer your question better.
It's a retail sale, but what it effectively does is it grants an exclusive to the funeral home.
It's going to have that effect. There's no question that the board who regulates the funeral homes does not dispute the fact that funeral homes have a benefit, get an advantage.
They have the exclusive. You've given them an
They're advantage. The only ones, the statute provides the only ones who can sell caskets intrastate in Louisiana. Yes, no.
They get an exclusive.
Right.
You know, I like the word, but isn't that what they did?
That's true. I'm not denying it. I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
So, but the mere fact, the fact that there is an economic benefit bestowed by the statute incidentally to some other purpose is not fatal to under a rational basis review, either for equal protection or substantive due process. We need to think of what the rational.
You're pushing the outer limits of the regulation here. You go back to Justice Douglas's opinion in the Oklahoma opticians case.
Uh-huh.
He did articulate in the opinion a rational basis for saying that opticians who could plainly just dispense by prescription, insisting that no. What you're going to do, you've got to take it to an optometrist. And on his face, it was plainly an optometrist, and so forth. They got the legislative that's in the rules to cut out opticians as competitors. So the case is very close in that sense. But you,
what?
Where is your rational basis for saying that you have to be open a funeral home to sell a wooden casket?
Well,
no requirement at all, other than the law.
We have to. In the analysis of how the 14th Amendment applies to states, either in equal protection or due process, requires that we identify a legitimate government interest first, and then a rational connection between, in the case of equal protection, the classification that exists, the classification of individuals, and in the case of due process, the relationship between the means adopted to effectuate.
Can we understand basic equal protection from
well, it helps me to remind myself.
The explanation of the state's rational basis for granting exclusive over the sale of caskets.
Here's the justification based for due process. The state decides that it's necessary and a good idea. The state really has to have a legitimate government interest, not a compelling interest, not a noble interest, just a legitimate interest, which is not a whole lot of interest, okay? Mm-hmm. A legitimate interest in regulating the process of death and dying. As part of that?
It's a very deferential standard, yes.
The legitimate interest isn't so much in dispute. It's are these means furthering it? And I look at this case as sort of a rifle shot on term 41, right, which says, which extends from the whole process of burying bodies and moving bodies and body parts to what's funeral merchandise. And then in term 41, they say that includes selling caskets, and that's the disconnect. Why does that means require the licensing to be a funeral home?
Here's why, and that's why, and there's in fact a basis in the record on this. After the plaintiff's case was, I think it was after Mark Coudrain's testimony, the district court said, tell me why you have not, that a rational basis for the statute has not been proven by the testimony of your own witnesses. I think it's at page 743 of the record.
It could be anything you can make up. It's the law. I mean,
right.
Anything my law clerk can dream up or anybody at any state. That's the standard. So.
This is more pointed, I think. The rational basis there, what's connected with this to the legitimate governmental interest of regulating the process of death and burial is the sale of the casket. The goal is that there be a consultation between the casket seller and the bereaved, so that there be an understanding of what is required. Is the person going to be buried in New Orleans? Some of the mausoleums here are quite small. That affects casket size. This is all brought out in the facts. But the important fact that comes out that led the district court to make that remark about the proving of a rational basis out of the testimony of the plaintiff's own witnesses is this consultation. The Abbey says, we consult with funeral directors. We ask them. We talk to them. Here's the point, Your Honor. The state could decide, we don't trust all the casket sellers who might be out there. We want to guarantee that there will be that consultation. So we link that requirement, that subtraction of this sale of a simple commercial item, like a pencil or something, no particular special quality to it, to a greater purpose. Now, I think another point that you raised, Judge Higginbotham, that I did not quite get a chance to respond to is the implications of holding that there's a fundamental liberty interest under the 14th Amendment that allows one to sell a casket.
No.
No, you didn't raise that?
No. If we want to talk about the slaughterhouse cases, we'll get back to that.
Well, privileges and immunities is not in this case. That's for sure.
What I'm talking about is basic equal protection doctrine. And I'm with you, at least as Mark from 1938, footnote four, Caroline product
yes.
forward. We drew a dichotomy between personal liberties and rights traceable to the Bill of Rights and state regulation of matters economic. And we generally consider that the Oklahoma case as being the sort of the zenith of deference to state legislatures representing and allowing essentially flat out transfers of wealth. However, what I'm suggesting, putting to you is that Justice Douglas's opinion, and that, as I recall, says it articulates a reason, a rational basis for that, and that one could conjure up. Now, it's not necessary that the legislature have considered it, and it. If there is a rational basis for it, despite the fact it may be a legislative log rule or whatever, maybe it doesn't control. But I'm not following what that rational basis test here is.
In terms of
public health?
It doesn't have to be that exact thing. It does not. The consumer protection was a theory in the trial court, but consumer protection in a very broad sense. In other words,
it all derives from this death and dying, that the states can regulate death and dying, and therefore, well, I can't really regulate. You're going to die, whether a state likes it or not. But they can regulate the business of death and dying, and that this connects to that. That's your basic.
That's the basic argument. Substantive process.
Does Armour play into this? I realize it was a tax case. It just struck me that here, 2 days before this argument, we get this Supreme Court case that's in the general area. It's not on the specific subject. That's just as to the mat as you can be on, we got to give a lot of deference as long as it's not burdening interstate commerce and special, protected classes, et cetera.
I think that's exactly correct. I think on the Armour case, it seems very difficult to me. I read it on Monday when I even before I got the notification, I saw the case. But even so, it's pretty new, so it's difficult to understand exactly what it means. But for equal protection, I think it means the equal protection ruling of the district court in this case has to be reversed. In that case, you had two classes of taxpayers, those who had prepaid their taxes already and those who had not yet finished paying their taxes over time. The city of Indianapolis repealed the tax and let all those who had not yet paid the tax off, remitted the debt. Those who had paid the tax said, that's a violation of equal protection. Those taxpayers don't have to pay the tax. We taxpayers have to pay the tax. The justification for Justice Breyer's decision is, well, that's very administratively inconvenient. That's the legitimate governmental interest in that case. The legitimate governmental interest that permits that classification in that case, which is much more in bright line,
That's a whole different breed of cat. That case speaks to a distinct line of constitutional cases involving taxation, et cetera. The one thing it does preach out, the trouble for your state, is that the dissenters saw, even in that case, an unwillingness to defer at all, and they weren't in more traditional terms. I won't go argue, I don't want to debate, I'm not trying to debate with you about it, but I don't yet have the answer that you were trying to give me.
My time is up on my principle.
Just go ahead and finish your answer.
I'm a little bit confused as to where what question you want me to answer, Your Honor.
Well, that's probably.
If you wanted me to go back to, I would.
Well, we've had a lot thrown at you.
Okay.
My response to you would be to, well, I'll come back.
If you want to give us in one sentence what you think your best rationale for this statute is, give it to us, and then Judge Higginson has a quick question, and we'll let you go.
The best rationale for the statute, both for equal protection and for due process, is that there is a rational connection between both the classification of sellers in the statute and for particular and for the connection between the restriction of sales to funeral directors for due process. That is, that it protects against the trauma of the wrong size coffin arriving. That's basically
gotcha.
It.
Judge Higginson has a quick question, then we'll let you sit down.
Under Craig Miles, the Sixth Circuit case,
yes.
I think you'd agree you lose.
Yes.
Okay. And
hate to say that so quickly, but
no,
I'm,
but I think you're right. You've looked at the Houston.
Under Powers versus Harris, we win.
You win, but you didn't urge to us today the raw majority position in Powers, which is even pure protectionism counts.
I was going to get there.
You were going to argue that?
I was.
All right.
Well,
here's my double question. Mm-hmm.
That was the second.
Because the presiding judge is indulging me with a question after time. Both those positions seem to be in tension with Judge Jones's considered dicta, two pages of it, in the Houston taxicab case. Where we said it would never be raw protection, and then we explicitly endorsed Craig Miles.
Indicated was the verb that the counsel for the Abbey used to describe what Judge Jones did in that case. I think that's about right. There's no evidence that I could see that before the court was the Powers versus Harris was there. That was a very different sort of case involving taxicab medallions and the allocation of them to different groups of companies.
You reserve some time for rebuttal. We're going to let you take your seat and let Mr. Ranson have his hard-fought 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Daniel Ranson, representing Louisiana Funeral Directors Association. Judge Higginbotham, I'd like to answer your question.
Thank you.
We're not here to talk about a box. We're here to talk about a transaction. A transaction that the Federal Trade Commission has recognized the consumer needs protection. We have two bills that have been introduced in Congress over the last 3 years for a Bill of Rights. And in that Bill of Rights that has been offered, it says that it recognizes that at all levels, the bereaved consumer is not protected, and we need a law that applies to all consumers at all levels. So, it isn't the box. It's nothing. The box is perfect. It could be anything.
What are you protecting the consumers for here when you give an exclusive?
Okay. From improper and overreaching sales tactics, fraud and abusive practices, predatory and exploitive sales practices. That's what the Federal Trade Commission.
History, the statute was passed in 1932, right?
The Louisiana statute?
This statute in question.
The original chapter was 1932.
If you're protecting consumers from all that, have you ever fined or put someone in jail or even ceased and desist the seller of a casket because of any of those bad things?
I don't represent the board, Your Honor,
board ever done it in how many years?
I believe that people have been brought before the board for many items.
Have sellers of casket. Containers ever?
Third-party sellers of funeral directors?
No, the case before us. Has the board ever had to enforce this against a retail seller ever if there's so many dangers to consumers?
I think there was a previous action by the board prior to this where they did bring an action against another company that it didn't go forward because they went out of business.
So never.
Well, I mean, in Texas, boards don't have jurisdiction over people they don't regulate. So if you don't have a license, the State Bar of Texas doesn't typically have jurisdiction over you. They may have jurisdiction over the unlawful practice. It depends on the particular board. So I guess what I'm saying is, does this board even have the authority to go after unlicensed people?
Yes, the license.
Okay.
The licensing law.
And so then did they do that?
Yes, they did.
And that's what we have
here?
Okay.
So this one time.
If you read the record, there's a testimony from a witness, an expert for the plaintiffs, I can't remember his name, said that until the funeral rule was passed, that is actually what brought about the third-party casket industry here.
Does any other state have this ability at this point?
I've cited in a footnote in my brief, there's, I think, 9 states out there that have these laws on their books,
against the third-party seller.
doesn't allow anybody but funeral directors to sell caskets. If you sell it in a casket to the general public, not a wholesale, but the general public, then that is a violation of the law. That's correct.
Now, is the monastery economically impacted by this rule? I mean, in other words, they can still sell if they, I don't know what caskets cost, thank God, but if it costs, if they want to sell it for $1,000, they can still sell it for $1,000 to your clients, right, to the funeral directors.
There's over 400 funeral establishments in the state. They're all sell funeral caskets. They sell them to anybody who wants to come in and buy one. And, in fact, when this came up, the association offered to assist the Abbey in getting their caskets in funeral homes throughout the state of Louisiana.
So they could do, yes. They could do that and still realize a profit.
Absolutely.
Is that practically true or only legally true?
That's practically true.
Okay.
I mean, there's many casket companies in this country that sell caskets strictly through the funeral homes. You mentioned Craig Miles. I wanted to mention one thing about Craig Miles. And that is, when you read Craig Miles, you've got to read it as what it stands on, and that is the City of Clyburn case. And that case said that what we have here is really a pretext. They went through the legislative history and said this was a pretext, and so we don't have to give it the usual customary analysis. And if you look at footnote 10 in the Merriman case, which was cited by the plaintiff, it says that. Footnote 10 says, and I could quote it to you because I think it's important, it says, Craig Miles concluded that equal protection analysis was not really applicable, relying on Clyburn. So the only case you really have here, you've got two cases out of the Fourth Circuit, and one that says that you've got to be a funeral director to even own a funeral home, which was upheld. That was before all these cases were decided. And that's the Guardian Plan versus T case, 1989 case. And then the Fourth Circuit got a second crack at it in 2009 in the Brown case, which came out and said that licensing requirements is within the realm of what the state could control. And again, if you read what the Federal Trade Commission said as to why this transaction needs to be regulated, it's because of the protect the consumer. And one thing that the Louisiana law does, it creates a right of action through an administrative procedure where you don't have to go hire a lawyer because you had a problem with a funeral. You can go before the state board. The licensor could be fined, could have their license revoked, restitution could be ordered.
And if you don't have a license, there's nothing to revoke.
That's correct.
Okay.
You can be fined. And the court has any other questions on behalf of the industry?
I know. 5 minutes went fast, didn't they? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the opportunity.
All right, Mr. Bullock.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The State Board and the funeral directors don't like to hear it, but a casket really is just a box. And in the state of Louisiana, the Abbey would have to transform its Abbey into a licensed funeral establishment in order to sell these boxes to the public, including the installation of an arrangement room, a viewing parlor for 30 people, and the installation of an embalming facility.
Is the Abbey, in fact, being harmed by this? I mean, I understand they can't sell it retail, but are they not able to charge the same price to sell it to a funeral home? Will the funeral homes not take their caskets? I mean, are they being impacted by this?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because it would be purely at the discretion of the funeral homes as to whether or not they would accept the
Abbey
caskets.
Well, but I meant more, you know, I realize theoretically they are. I'm just wondering practically, is there evidence in the record that they actually are having difficulty selling their goods to, you know, funeral homes?
Well, Your Honor, I should point out the record indicates that as soon as they even sold their first casket, they were sent a cease and desist letter by the state board.
Well, and that's retail. I'm not saying are they having trouble doing it retail. I'm
right.
saying are they having trouble, maybe my question isn't clear, selling it to funeral homes. You have Mr. Ranson with his offer to facilitate that.
Right.
But with or without that, are they having trouble selling wholesale?
They have not tried. And
okay.
our point
so,
is
so there's no record on that.
That's right.
Okay.
And our point is, however, that they have the right to sell directly to the public because there is no public health or safety concerns here with the construction or sale of caskets, and there's no legitimate consumer protection interest that is advanced here. The district court looked at the rational basis here, looked at the evidence. The district court followed the proper standard under Williamson Lee Optical and concluded that there was no logical or rational connection between requiring the monks to become funeral directors and to transform their abbey into a funeral establishment simply to sell this wooden box. And that is what the standard was.
What about this argument? This is kind of a special box. And when my loved one passes and I have this transaction under these very difficult circumstances, that it isn't just a box like when I'm moving from apartment to apartment and I go over to U-Haul and buy a box, because I'm putting loved one in it. So what about that argument, that we want to make sure this is handled delicately? And, you know, no question. I really don't have any question that the Abbey would be very courteous and honorable in this. I mean, I'm willing to spot you that. And that's why, again, it's a very sympathetic party here. But nonetheless, this law applies to the garage down the street that wants to make a box and sell it because my loved one has passed.
That's true, Your Honor. But I think it's important, again, to look at the fact that in Louisiana, there is no standards whatsoever on the construction of caskets. There's no even requirement that people be buried in a casket at all. There's no legal requirement for doing so. And clearly, the imposition of this licensing regime upon the Abbey and the monks is irrationally burdensome. It would require them to give up 2 years of their life.
That's the limiting principle, because when you look at Chapter 10, we could go through courts, if we make the wrong ruling, I count almost 60 professions being licensed and regulated, cosmetologists, interior designers. The state of Louisiana regulates and requires licenses from a vast array. And when you look at the specific restriction here, I read the statute to be quite tailored. They exclude urns. Anybody can sell urns. It's just the caskets, not flowers, not crucifixes, not the corpse veil. So if you look at it in that sense, what they're worried about is not monks, but other people calling the emotionally ill, people in hospitals, people in nursing homes, and saying, you're about to die, buy our casket. And that's exactly what the statute says we need to regulate, and I would think they need to.
Your Honor, respectfully, that is not the case. There's no rational connection between whatever concern there might be.
Why is it rational to say anyone who's selling caskets can't call people who are in hospitals, which is what Section 846 says? We don't care whether it's a funeral home or anything. We're going to watch how they make those sales.
Your Honor, and this is something, this prohibition on aggressive sales tactics, which is something that the State Board did not bring up at the trial court, did not argue that.
We negative anything.
Well, I think we would have the opportunity to negative it at the trial court.
But there's no question but the state of Louisiana can directly regulate these caskets. That's not the issue. Well, they didn't do that. What they did was to take away their form of regulation is to take away that business, unwilling to regulate it, unwilling to put it in work, and give it to a separate group of businessmen. I mean, that's what is a transfer of wealth. So no question but they can regulate, and if there are any abusive practices, they can do it.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
The question comes in the rationality of giving an underlying absence of any kind of rationality for conferring this benefit upon taking from one and giving to another. Now, which leads you to this ultimate question: can the state of Louisiana, for example, decide that it wants to subsidize the funeral home business for whatever legislative reasons it chooses by giving them tax concessions? Perhaps it's a large chain of, and they think they ought to get these tax benefits, and they believe that'll be passed through to the consumers and themselves. So they give them tax concessions, and they don't give it to their competitors. That happens somewhat routinely with Toyota plants, gets all kinds of concessions when they come in, and Ford dealer doesn't get it.
Sure, Your Honor, and that would not, this a decision in favor of the Abbey here would not impact that. That really does go with the broad discretion, as the court recognized in the Armour decision, about tax classifications. And the court has broad discretion to do so. If I could just get back real quickly in response to Judge Higginson's question, because I don't think I answered it entirely. So this concern about supposed aggressive sales tactics that they, again, put forward in their trial, in their appellate briefs, it was not an issue here, but that should not concern this court. First of all, I'm not even quite sure what that means with regards to aggressive sales tactics. I mean, there's a whole body of law about solicitations by lawyers, by bail bondsmen, which this court addressed in Pruitt versus Harris, Speaks versus Cruz, about health care providers. So we'd have to see whether or not whatever prohibitions they have in mind would comport with First Amendment guarantees. But even beyond that, setting aside that, If the board is truly concerned about that, it is within their discretion to pass a regulation saying that anybody who sells a casket cannot solicit at hospices or hospitals. What they can't do under the Constitution is impose this entirely burdensome and irrational licensing regime upon folks who don't want to provide the range of funeral services but simply want to sell a box.
I understand that argument, and tell me why it doesn't run right into what Judge Higginbotham was saying was the zenith, the Supreme Court statement in Lee Optical. Because when I read Lee Optical, it's not a long opinion. They say, you know, the frame may seem to be unrelated to eye health, but we're not going to micromanage. If a state wants to be needlessly wasteful, and in that case, require a doctor to sit in the retail store, they can. And I find a hard time seeing that different than saying, we're going to impose a really heavy, needlessly wasteful thing on even abbeys because it relates to death.
No, Your Honor, because it does, because in Williamson Lee Optical, they said there was some type of public health or safety concern that was present there with regards to the eye.
I mean, when you look at the statute, it's about body parts and reburying people and pulverizing body parts. That, the state's got a really compelling interest in regulating.
And you're right, Your Honor, and that is why the Abbey has absolutely no interest and stipulated in handling anything to do with the funeral, with dead bodies,
last
with embalming, anything like
point.
That.
That's a good point. Yeah. Lee Optical even finishes up saying, what about a state that just wants to get commercialism out of a profession? Doesn't that undermine the district court's reasoning and the FTC? They don't want profit here. This isn't supposed to be a lowest price world. We're concerned about bigger aesthetic, emotional bereavement issues.
Your Honor, I think it is important to mention the FTC, because the FTC has looked at the funeral industry for decades. They filed a brief in this case saying that they oppose restrictions on this.
We want to encourage the maximum competition. And I read Lee Optical to say the opposite, which is there are some professions a state may want to say, we're not going to make it efficient.
We're not going to make it commercial, but you cannot have a protectionist bent. I mean, that's what the court held in Houston Taxis. It strongly indicated, I think, and agreed with the Craig Miles decision.
Okay, but then do we need evidence that there was log rolling or whatever the right expression is here? Or can we just assume that there's no really other reason for it? I'm not assuming there's no other reason for this. I think if there's evidence that this was some kind of underhanded statute, I mean, you're going to have to go back to 1932.
Sure.
Was that Huey Long?
Yeah, maybe. You might ask the folks from Louisiana about that.
Okay, whatever the burden is, it's going to be going back in time and proving us some sort of nefarious motive in 1932, I guess.
Your Honor, you don't have to do that. That's the bottom line. And the point with...
So we assume a nefarious motive of the legislature? Aren't we supposed to assume the opposite?
No, you don't have to assume. I want to make this very clear.
You have to do it to articulate or not a rational basis.
What the court said in Craig Miles is that once you negative all the rational bases, the legitimate government interests of public health and safety and consumer protection, what you are left with is simple economic protectionism, which Craig Miles held is an illegitimate government interest. Now, the Craig Miles court or this court could have just stopped and said, there's no legitimate public health and safety interest here. There's no consumer protection interest here. That's it. Case closed. The reason why this is at issue in this case is because the State Board is arguing, pursuant to the Powers decision, that even if there's no logical connection between the licensing requirements and any legitimate government interest, that all we have is pure economic protectionism, or as this court said in Houston Taxis, naked economic preferences, then that's okay.
In Houston Taxicab doesn't resolve this case. So to the extent that we're down to economic protectionism, I think we have to decide, do we want to follow Craig Miles on that or do we not? So let's hear your, I mean, if we're not talking about a protected class, we're not talking about disfavoring out-of-state people or, you know, this kind of stuff, and all the classes that Armour said we don't have here, then really in Armour they preferred one group of citizens of their state over another in an economic fashion. I realize it was taxing. I'm not saying it's directly on point. I just thought a Supreme Court opinion 3 days before my hearing was of interest. Why not just pure economic protectionism as long as we don't run afoul of these other categories?
Your Honor, respectfully, with regards to Armour, I think what the court did there is graft onto a interest in administrative burdens, that it would just be too administratively burdensome.
What was interesting to me was Judge Breyer started out with, okay, it's not a protected class, It's not burdening interstate commerce,
right.
And it's not anything with the new resident. So got that out of the way, and we could say the same thing here.
Yes.
So now, what's wrong with economic protectionism if we don't run afoul of these other broad categories that we're not dealing with here?
Because, Your Honor, we would urge this Court, of course, to follow Craig Mouse, to also follow the Ninth Circuit as well. The Tenth Circuit's decision empowers the two-judge concurrence or plurality there was really an outlier. That is really a rare phenomenon for a court to explicitly hold that just pure economic protectionism.
Okay, and I'm
absent,
just asking you, what's wrong? Okay, so everybody else has gone running when they heard that term. I'm asking, why should we? Not if everybody jumps off a cliff, should we jump off a cliff?
Sure.
What is the reason
right.
we should adopt that concept
because,
and be scared of that term, too?
Because by its very nature, government power must be put to public ends, Your Honor. It cannot be put to purely private purposes. And the Supreme Court indicated that in the Metropolitan Life case. Other courts have indicated that pure economic protectionism is, and simply capturing government power only to benefit one private party is unconstitutional. That's also a theme in the court's public use jurisprudence as well. The
now,
court
I was thinking of Kelso, though.
Of the Kelo case?
Kelo.
Yeah, that's right, Your Honor. And what the court said there, they did rule in that case that the eminent domain power is broad. However, the court reaffirmed in that case that if you had a purely private transfer of property from A to B without any sort of other public justifications, whether it's economic development or that sort of thing, then it would be unconstitutional.
Okay,
the court reaffirmed
you're giving
that.
These funeral directors something of a monopoly on, well, a monopoly on retail sales of caskets with the public goal of making sure they have everybody has a place to go and be consulted with and counseled and a place of harmony rather than somebody's garage. And that may sound silly, but I don't know that Kelo with the, you know, boardwalk was any more
Your Honor, that
logical.
Kelo, I was just invoking Kelo simply for
No, I raised it first.
Sure.
You raised it and I was thinking it.
Sure, absolutely. And that really just addressed the fact that you cannot have purely private uses of government power.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a pretty helpful case because there the court said, you know, even future employment might be enough to satisfy it. So it's an immensely – and what they then said was if people have a problem with it, excluding monks from selling, go to the polls, right? You've got the media in this country. You can go to the legislature. And I know people can say, well, maybe special interests have captivated it. But our assumption is still it's much better when you have a huge incongruity. Monks who make exquisite items can't sell them, to say to people, expose it and get a legislative fix rather than come to a court and say constitutionally you've got to do this and then you've got all those other professions. Every single licensing regime is going to be looked at. Do the cosmetologists really need to have whatever they have?
Your Honor, respectfully, that is not going to be a problem. The rational basis test is broad, but the government cannot require wholly irrational applications of licensing regimes to somebody, and I think it's important to point out here, who simply sells a consumer product.
Consumer product, it's a box that will contain a dead body or parts. That's not just a product. You could easily see over the history of mankind, it's one of the most important products to regulate.
Your Honor, respectfully, I think that I do not agree that it is some type of mysterious
not
or
mysterious,
special
containing body
right,
parts.
Right, Your Honor. That's true. But when it's sold by the monks or when it's sold by any other third-party casket, it is not containing any body parts whatsoever. And I think it's important to point out
never. That Judge Haynes' point is it could be the guy in the back of his garage who calls the old lady in the hospital and says, you're about to die. You want my box.
Your Honor, if there's a concern about that, they can address direct solicitation.
That's not how we undo legislation. They can do something else. It's your obligation to show that that concern is wholly irrational.
Absolutely. And the district court specifically found that it was wholly irrational.
We did, but with heavy emphasis on we want to get prices down no matter what. That's what's in the public interest.
No, Your Honor. That is absolutely not what the district court held. They looked specifically at whether there's any public health and safety justification, whether there's any consumer protection justification here, and the court held that there is not. And one of of the reasons for that, and one of the things that the court emphasized, is that a funeral director, unless you do absolutely everything by yourself and you take your loved one's body and you do it everything by yourself, the funeral director is always involved in this process because they're the only ones who can arrange funerals. They're the only ones that can handle a dead.
Just like requiring an ophthalmologist to be next to the guy that takes the lens that falls out of your glasses and puts it in. That's all in Lee Optical. The court said you can't have an optician who all he does is do that screw back. It's needless and wasteful to require the doctor be there, but that's the state's prerogative.
Your Honor, it's not needless or just needless or wasteful. It is irrational. And it is particularly irrational to apply this licensing regime, which would require the monks to give up 2 years of their life.
It seems very onerous.
That is what is really irrational, even if you would think that there is some type of interest in...
Well, it may be irrational to go to law school, but we require that. It may be irrational to go... I mean, why can't I just go ground-cutting people's hair? I mean, that's just a thing of vanity. The hair isn't even really alive. And so what? That's not doing heart surgery, so why should we be regulating that? Why should the guy who comes and fixes my toilet be regulated? Why should everybody who does pretty much everything? Why do we have driver's licenses? I mean, we can get pretty far afield.
And if I could respond, Your Honor.
I mean, what if we said you have to go to a years of driving classes to get a driver's license? Would we invalidate that? Because that's really burdensome, and everybody else in all these other states is just driving around running into each other without the class.
No, Your Honor. What we're dealing with here is not a profession. We're not talking about lawyers or nurses, which was what the Fifth Circuit addressed in the Leclerc case or the Van Staten cases. What we're talking about here is the sale of consumer product. And this really would be tantamount to saying something like, if you want to sell shoes, you have to become a fully licensed podiatrist in order to do so.
As I said, barbers, cosmetologists, sanitarians, athletic trainers.
Sure, and
those are
not people who are simply selling a consumer product. Absolutely. They're engaged in a whole range of
services.
Okay,
well, what about pharmacies? We regulate pharmacies, and they're selling a consumer product, which is a drug.
It's a controlled substance. There's clear public health and safety implications here, not a harmless consumer product like a casket. That's really
harmless
the difference.
Harmless in the hands of the monastery. I'm not so sure it's harmless in the hands of my hypothetical garage guy.
Your Honor, if there is any concern about that, then the state could be free to regulate that. What they cannot do, again, is to impose this wholly irrational licensing scheme.
I mean, the problem is I really feel a tension as a federal court under the federal Constitution, which granted applies to the states, I'm not contending otherwise, rewriting a state statute governing a traditionally state area under this kind of test. I mean, strict scrutiny, different question, interstate commerce, different question. A lot of things are a different question. But this is that very deferential, I mean, ridiculously deferential. The test is something like, could anybody, you know, we got a room full of people here, could anybody come up with a basis that makes a lick of sense? That's not a very high standard.
Your Honor, it's not a very high standard, but it is a standard that has meaning. It is not completely toothless, and the courts have stressed that. And I think it's important to point out that 4 out of the 5 courts that have looked at this have come to the conclusion under the deferential rational basis test that this is unconstitutional. And even the court in Powers, the 2-judge majority in Powers, didn't even buy any public health or safety or consumer protection rationale. They simply adopted this, outlier position that pure economic protectionism, which is what this is constitutional. So you're not going out on a limb. You're not rewriting a statute. You're simply in keeping with what a majority of courts that have looked at this issue have done, and there's been no revolution in the courts that have looked at this of leading to challenges to lawyer licensing or anything like that. We're talking about
a 2-1, right?
Excuse me?
At the circuit level, it's 2-1.
It's 2-1.
It's a fair majority.
That's right. But Powers, that's right. But I should say on the Merrifield case in the Ninth Circuit has also said that economic protectionism is not a legitimate government interest. That's true at the circuit level. It's 1-1, but I think it's important to look at the Tenth Circuit's reasoning, which is they didn't really accept these.
Klimkovich, the concurrence, is a more traditional.
He's the more he rejects economic protectionism and does that. But all the other courts that have looked at this, 4 out of 5, including the district court here, looked at the evidence, went through, and they did not use an improper legal standard. They admitted that the rational basis test is deferential. The government has broad power to regulate, but there has to be a limit to that. They found that the application of these licensing regimes to the sale of a box breaches that limit.
Judge Higginbotham asked both opposing counsel, what's the rational basis? Could you tell me what you heard your opposing counsel say is the rational basis for the seller licensing?
Sure, Your Honor. They basically put forward two broad rationales, public health and safety and consumer protection. There was the condition of the body and the size of the body. Those are essentially public health and safety rationales. I think it's important to point out and interesting that they really didn't even argue that in the appellate courts, and no court has ever accepted that there's any type of public health or safety concern with the sale of a box. The other two factors that they looked at was the both of them are interrelated to the situation with Crips in southeastern Louisiana. And the court looked at that evidence and found that there was no rational connection between any concern about the supposedly unique situation with Crips in southeastern Louisiana and the licensing requirements here. There's no requirement that they study Crips on during college, during their apprenticeship, or during the funeral director licensing exam as well. And the only thing that that prohibition does, the prohibition here does, is that it eliminates folks who have local knowledge, like Deacon Mark and the abbot, who would be would know about the situation with Crips in Louisiana. Because remember, as the FTC has found, and it's the rule under federal law, is that folks throughout Louisiana can purchase a casket from out of state, whether it's Walmart or from Amazon or from the monastery.
See, that would be the interstate commerce thing. There's nothing that they can do on that.
No, Your Honor, I'm not making it for make the interstate commerce point. I'm making it the point that that is their federal right to do that. The only people that they can't buy it from now are the folks in their own state. And that really highlights the irrationality of this law and shows that it is not rationally related to any
selling through an internet portal through somebody else in Mississippi?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because they would be subject to the jurisdiction of the state board. So they would be subject to Louisiana law because they're located in Louisiana, and they could not circumvent that. Clearly, Louisiana could not punish folks in other states who were selling
through
Louisiana.
We don't want to encourage monks to violate the law. I appreciate that concept. So thank you. It was an excellent presentation, and we we'll now hear back from Mr. Gruning.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Responding to the arguments that have been made, one point made by...
Let me ask you a question. Do you think the state of Louisiana could require those cosmetologists we've been talking about to have a law degree?
I don't think so, no. I think that would be irrational. I think the connection would be irrational.
There's no relationship between
there'd
them.
Be no relationship. I think there'd be.
It's right.
Likewise,
it's
if the state of Louisiana provided to regulate death and burial that no one could sell a casket, that all caskets had to be donated, that would be irrational, I think, in my view. But I think I'd like to return to the pretext argument was something that came up in Mr. Bullock's presentation. His position is that we can reach a factual finding of protectionism by the state by process of elimination. That's not consistent with a rational basis analysis. The burden is on the plaintiff to show that there is no rational basis, and I think the burden is also on the court to search for rational basis, if one can be found, a hypothetical rational basis, not a basis that the court...
Or the explorer heading out looking for the rational basis.
I don't think... my suggestion was that the public, the legitimacy of government interests is not restricted to health and safety. It's just not.
Now, you've mentioned the health and safety, the thing about the size, no. And then this bereavement transaction thing. What about his argument that unless you bury the body yourself, unless you take loved one and put loved one in box from Joe's garage yourself and bury it out in the sand, The funeral home's going to be involved, and you're going to get your counseling, wherever you get your casket.
I thought you were going in a slightly different direction, namely that Louisiana doesn't insist that everyone be buried in a coffin, and some can be buried in a shroud. Louisiana is not obligated to legislate every square inch of the...
My question, you had argued this need for bereavement counseling or whatever as part of the transaction.
Yes.
And that's a rational basis. And my question is, what is to prevent me, if I lived in Louisiana and loved one dies, from buying the box and putting loved one in it, buying the box on the Internet, putting loved one in it, putting him in the ground, and being done with it?
Well, for reasons that Your Honor alluded to before, that implicates either the dormant commerce power or interstate commerce.
Okay.
In which case,
if I hired someone else to do it, they have to be a funeral director, and I'm going to get my counseling. So, is the concern about right? I mean, I can't. Nobody's challenging that I cannot go out and hire your opponent to bury my loved one here in Louisiana, pick up the body, put him in a box. That would then be acting as a funeral director. Nobody's challenging that.
Correct.
So if I have to get loved one buried by someone other than me, go to a licensed funeral director anyway, regardless of whether I bought the casket on the Internet or from the monks or from the funeral director, am I not going to get that counseling anyway? That's what I thought his argument was, and I want your response to it.
The counseling about grief or the counseling about?
Whatever counseling you think should happen, am I not going to get that anyway?
What you would not get is advice at the point of sale of the casket on the characteristics of the casket that are appropriate for the particular parish in which someone dies.
Okay,
They're saying your
guys don't have any training on that, so they don't know any more than anybody else about it.
I don't think that's correct. What Louisiana provides is apprenticeship. Now, the benefit of an apprenticeship is that you can learn, as I think Judge Higginbotham might have said, the local lore, or perhaps they said it, that you can learn how things are. Yes, they did say it about the monks. They have local knowledge about the way burial practices occur. Apprenticeship is how you learn that. Apprenticeship is an acceptable way for the state to provide for the training of professionals. It used to be how lawyers were all trained.
So you're saying in your apprenticeship, sort of like if you read the law back in the day, if you learned at the feet of the master, you would learn this stuff and pass that on.
I think so.
Anything else you want to add as your
Yes, on the outlier issue, if this court accepts the reasoning of the plaintiffs in this case, that decision will be the outlier. That is to find an economic, substantive due process basis for saying that the state may not regulate an ordinary commercial transaction for a legitimate government interest, whether that interest is the one that I've described first, but also if this court follows Powers and says, look, economic protectionism is a feature of life in legislation. It's going to happen. Can't make it not happen. That cannot be illegitimate. If you take either of those purposes, then if you take their point of view, that decision would be the outlier.
Okay. Unfortunately, even the expanded time is up. I appreciate both sides' arguments very much. The case is under submission. This panel has concluded.